This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Attack on a Canadian mosque. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Monday, January 30th, glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Authorities in Quebec City say six people have been killed and eight others injured after two men opened fire on worshippers last night.
Protests across the country in response to President Trump's temporary travel restrictions for seven countries tied to terrorism.
A deadly raid on an Al-Qaeda branch in Yemen has claimed the life of a U.S. Navy SEAL.
And at the office, being the jokester on the job can elevate your status, but not without risk.
Really being good at making your colleagues laugh at an appropriate joke can elevate your status, make you appear more competent and confident. But if you tell an inappropriate joke, your status goes down.
Wall Street Journal writer Sue Schellenbarger on using humor at work. She's here in about 20 minutes. There's been a mass shooting north of the border at a mosque in Quebec City. Six people were killed, eight wounded when gunmen opened fire during prayers last night. 39 others escaped injury. Police said two suspects were involved in the attack. Both have been arrested. Mass shootings, as you may know, are rare in Canada, which has stricter gun control laws than the U.S. The premier of Quebec province, Philippe Couillard, said security would be increased at mosques in Quebec City and Montreal.
We are with you. This is your home. You're welcome here. We are all Quebecers.
Quebec has struggled at times to reconcile its secular identity with a rising Muslim population, many of them from North Africa. In June last year, a pig's head was left on the doorstep of the cultural center. The face covering, or niqab, has become a big issue in the 2015 Canadian federal election, especially in Quebec, where the majority of the population there supported a ban 2 years ago on it at citizenship ceremonies. Well, a busy weekend of political and legal wrangling. It began Friday when President Trump put new temporary travel restrictions in place governing seven countries that the U.S. had previously identified as having ties to terrorism. Protests broke out, including yesterday in Seattle. We resist. There's now a 90-day ban on entry to the U.S. on anyone from Iraq, Syria, Sudan, Iran, Somalia, Libya, and Yemen. The order also suspends all refugees for 120 days and bars Syrian refugees indefinitely. By late Saturday afternoon, there were reports of people being detained at airports. White House senior advisor Kellyanne Conway was on Fox News Sunday.
If they're vetted, it's a routine screening process that they'll go through. If they are not dangerous, if they're not a threat, then they will be disposed of in a case-by-case. Their situations will be handled on a case-by-case basis.
Late Saturday, a handful of federal judges ordered the government to stop the removal of refugees and immigrants detained at airports. Here's Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee.
This is not a matter that deals with those who walk across the border and a wall. These are people that are coming with documents. So my plan is to introduce legislation to repeal this executive order.
There's an estimated 1 to 200 people affected out of the roughly 325,000 international travelers who arrive in the U.S. each day. The Trump administration officials say the temporary ban is necessary to keep out possible terrorists while they put in place tougher screening and vetting procedures. We often hear the phrase extreme vetting. What exactly does that mean? We're joined now live this morning by security expert Paul Violas, chairman of Violas Group International. Paul, good morning. What do you think it is that we mean by extreme vetting?
Good morning, Gordon. It's really the most poignant question of all as we kind of navigate through this time right now. And that is for listeners to understand the business side of what extreme vetting means. Right now, we have virtually no vetting, which we all know is problematic, to say the very least, regarding the integrity of our country in and of itself. What we need to understand is that when we call vetting, we're calling it a background investigation. We're investigating human beings, every soul that wants to come in this country. Now, in the United States, we have a database, which is called the NCIC, allows sworn law enforcement officers acting under color of law to obtain information regarding pretty much anybody. Now, those are American citizens. The moment you leave the country, no database exists. The president then selects countries that are from war-torn areas. He's not targeting Muslims. And this isn't a pro-Trump speech, Gordon. This is just an is-what-it-is speech. These are countries that are in the middle of issues with respect to having individuals running from other terrorists, trying to find some type of peace and coming to the United States. Now, I hear the congresswoman from Texas saying that, you know, they're coming with documents. What documents? In order for us to understand the vetting process, you need to know, one, there's no database. Two, we actually have to use human assets or individuals on the ground in these countries to obtain information via personal interviews. It's a very time-consuming issue.
I think I read somewhere, I scribbled this down, the current vetting process from these seven listed countries relies on databases that do not exist?
Correct. There is no database at all in the countries that we're talking about. So we can't sit at a computer and type in this person's name and then see, have they ever been arrested? Are they connected to a particular group? Are they on a wanted list? It doesn't exist. We have to use human beings that we have vetted that are from the intelligence community to go to these villages and ascertain who these people actually are. That's why it's so problematic when you start hearing Congress people jumping up and saying that they're coming in the country with documents. You have no idea what you're talking about. They don't have any documents that's going to enable us to ascertain whether or not these individuals that are coming from these war-torn areas are going to live in our communities, are possibly terrorists, or connected to terrorism. That's what the president's doing. It's a very simple thing.
All right, so this law, or I'm sorry, this executive order broadened these grounds for removing and detaining people, but this is building on an immigration law, I believe, signed in 1996 by President Clinton.
Correct. But it's really giving it teeth, and it's actually putting it into play. It's sort of like having, Gordon, you know what? The best analogy I can give listeners right now is it's sort of like having a policy and procedure in your office, and you put it on the in the bookcase, and it grows dust, and nobody opens it. If this thing, we can have the best policy in the world, but if we don't enforce it, it's meaningless. And we saw what's happened over the last 8 years with respect to that. The other part about this is you have to understand that from a business perspective, Gordon, it takes about 6 to 8 weeks minimum.
Okay.
To conduct a screening process on every single human being. So when the president says, I'm going to take 90 days out, I need to review our process, from the business side of it, we have to review who are we using, how valid of a source are they, how long is it taking, and what type of results are we getting. Once we have a good, solid position in place, we're going to be a lot more efficient. But there's no silver bullet here. We're going to have to get a process in place that makes sense, one that's cost-effective, and two, that's going to give us valid and reliable data regarding the people that are coming in this country.
All right, let me ask you this, because time's running short. The Wall Street Journal said about 161 people have been charged with terrorism-related crimes since the terror attacks in 2001. 11 of those 161 from Syria, Iran, Libya, Yemen, Sudan, or Somalia, the countries named this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So at the end of the day, what we know is that our intelligence tells us these countries are the countries that we need to be concerned with. That means we have human assets on the ground in our intelligence community that are obtaining information that's close to impossible to obtain. We know who to be concerned with, and that's the information being relayed to the president, and that is how he's making his decision about how do we remain the most protected.
Mm. Hey, thanks for a few minutes as always, Paul. Much appreciated. Paul Violas, security expert and also chairman of Violas Group International. 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks, too, for those who joined us on Facebook Live. Somebody had said, is that your home studio? No, if it were the home studio, you'd see the two dogs and two cats crawling around all over the place. Glad you're with us. A member of the elite U.S. Navy SEAL team has been killed and three others were wounded during a raid against senior al-Qaeda leaders in Yemen. U.S. Central Command said yesterday that another service member was injured in a hard landing nearby and that an MV-22 Osprey aircraft used in the raid had to be intentionally destroyed after it was unable to fly afterward, We get more now from this morning's Mike Gavin.
This was the first combat death under the new Trump administration. Fox News says the planning for this operation began before Mr. Trump assumed office. Security officials in Yemen said the assault killed three senior al-Qaeda leaders. Just over a week ago, suspected U.S. drone strikes killed three other alleged al-Qaeda operatives in the same area. The first such killings reported in Yemen since Mr. Trump took the oath of office. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula has long been seen by Washington as among the most dangerous terrorist groups. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. It's 19 minutes after the hour. This portion of the program is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place is not enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, and you do it all with just a single click. You can find candidates in any city, any industry, all across the country. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. You'll love the ease and simplicity. No juggling emails, no juggling those calls to your office. You can quickly screen your candidates, give them a rating, and hire the right person quickly. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. It's 21 minutes after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, gunmen attacked a suburban Quebec City mosque as worshippers were finishing their prayers last night, killing six and wounding at least eight. The attack appears to be the first mass shooting at an Islamic house of worship in North America, and government officials wasted no time calling it an act of terrorism. Quebec Prime Minister Philippe Couillard.
No one is completely safe, and no community in this very small world today can be sure of its safety.
Two suspects have been arrested. They remain unidentified. The White House is trying to tamp down concerns about President Trump's sweeping immigration order in the face of widespread protests across the country. Trump's aides are stressing that just a small portion of travelers have been affected by the order, but opponents want more details, like Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti.
We deserve the answers to questions about how many people exactly have been detained or forced to leave the United States. What is the plan to release them within the constitutionally required 72-hour period?
Dozens of colleges are also opposing the sweeping travel ban, which has left some students and professors stranded abroad. The Association of American Universities is urging Trump to reverse his order, saying it will only steer top scholars to countries that compete with the U.S. Billionaire industrialist Charles Koch is launching a campaign to sink a border tax under consideration by Republican leaders in Congress, a move that could complicate lawmakers' efforts to find a way to pay for President Trump's proposed wall on the U.S. border with Mexico. Americans for Prosperity, a conservative political advocacy group founded by Charles Koch and his brother David, plans to use its network of wealthy political donors and activists to kill the proposal, which aims to raise $1.2 trillion over 10 years on goods coming into the U.S. This burglar wasn't only hungry, he was also neat. Police say an Ohio burglar made himself at home in houses he broke into by cooking and showering before leaving. Authorities in Youngstown say the 33-year-old man was arrested after a woman arrived home from work and found her kitchen ransacked with food all over and her stove used. She heard running water upstairs and found the man in her shower.
Oh, my.
Yuck.
What a discovery that would be.
Oh, yuck.
Do you ever use that shower again?
I don't think so.
Oh, my goodness. Yep. That was bizarre. It's just like he wanted to get caught.
Yeah, really.
Right? Let me just stick around for a little while. Oh, boy. 23 minutes after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Making others laugh at the office can be a path to prestige. However, tell just one inappropriate joke and your status among peers hits the skids. Wall Street Journal writer Sue Schellenberger explains how humor can be used effectively at work if you're willing to walk that high wire. Sue, what have you found?
Well, the researchers at Wharton at University of Pennsylvania and Harvard did a joint study on exactly how telling jokes affects your status on the job. First time anybody's really looked at the individual career effects. And they found that really being good at making your colleagues laugh at an appropriate joke and elevate your status, make you appear more competent and confident. But if you tell an inappropriate joke, your status goes down. So it's a kind of a tightrope to make sure you get it right.
Wow. All right. So it I guess, always a risky venture. Is there a difference, say, between telling a traditional, I don't know, you know, 20, 30-second joke versus, say, dropping one-liners?
That's a great question. The best humor at work is deeply integrated with the context. If you're in a meeting and you pick up on something funny that just happened, to just drop a little one-liner in, people really enjoy it. The humor experts I spoke with said that trying to tell a canned joke sometimes just doesn't go over as well. It doesn't seem as natural.
I think it's interesting, though, the perception, right, of funny people that, you know, seem to, well, there's the perception that they seem to be smarter than others. What's behind that?
The previous studies link humor with intelligence. I think it's because you need a certain sensitivity. You need to be smart to make the joke go over well, and humor is correlated with intelligence in studies. And people assume you're not only confident enough to take the risk of telling a joke, but you're competent and smart. And interestingly, in some of the studies, people who told effective jokes were more likely later to be elected leaders of their groups.
Wow. All right, so explain where that's worked. And then I know you talked to a couple of folks who have had this work in their favor, say in an interview or something.
Right. I spoke to one young grad student in Texas who said that, you know, he was in an interview for a really competitive program, and they came to that difficult question for him, you know, well, what do you do for hobbies, for fun? And everybody there seemed to play golf. He didn't know how. He managed to turn it into a funny one-liner where he said his roommates were both on the college golf team, but he was their trainer. And he told the joke in a way that left everybody laughing at the end, and they ended the interview on a warm note.
Thanks, Sue. Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger. Her column is called Work and Family. It's 30 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Monday, January 30th. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: 6 dead, 8 injured at a shooting at a mosque in Quebec City. Protests over a Trump executive order putting temporary travel restrictions in place for 7 specific countries. Terrorism raid in Yemen claims the life of a Navy SEAL. Super Bowl TV ad costs $5 million for 30 seconds, but it's not unusual for a company to spend another $1 million promoting that ad. And the confusion that Amazon's Alexa is causing in homes. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, it's the season, right, where Hollywood pats itself on the back. More hardware and honors were handed out last night at the Screen Actors Guild Awards, and celebrities continue to believe that most Americans care about their political opinions, so they offered more.
We're in a really tricky time in the world, in our country, and things are very inexcusable and scary and need action. And I'm so grateful to be part of a group of people that cares and that wants to reflect things back to society.
There's Emma Stone after winning Outstanding Performance in La La Land, weighing in on President Trump's executive order regarding immigration from countries considered to have ties to terrorism. More now from attorney Joseph Marone in Philadelphia, who's with us live this morning. Joseph, what about these celebrities spouting off the politics? Are there any, I don't know, there potential damaging career moves here?
Well, listen, I mean, celebrities have been coming to the forefront, speaking out to the public on behalf of political issues for a century. So it's not uncommon. I mean, this stuff goes back to from the time, you know, women's rights to vote to the civil rights movement. I mean, there's even stories that Oprah was influential in getting Obama the Democratic nomination in 08
right,
with her platform. So by celebrities coming out to speak, obviously they know they have you know, an enormous platform for politics and for policy, and they make a difference, especially to the young people. The only thing is they open themselves up to potential ramifications depending on what their obligations are to their organization or to whatever contract they may be under.
The celebrity influence, by the way, did not seem to play much of a role this past election, right, given that you mentioned Oprah. But I got to bring in the kind of the violent talk. We had Madonna at the March for Women in New York talking about blowing up the White House. And then there was this guy, David Harbour, the actor, last night. He won for Best Ensemble in a Drama Series. He said to, quote, punch some people in the face with soul, heart, and joy. Could they get in trouble for stuff like that?
Well, listen, you know, you can. Your freedom of speech is obviously something protected under the Constitution. We know that. Everybody uses that as their platform to say whatever they believe they want to say, whether it's right or wrong or damaging, and they say they're protected. However, a celebrity may be subject to a contract with their organization, just as an athlete subject to the NFL contracts. A perfect example of that, Colin Kaepernick, who was big about this year with the national anthem. I mean, he was subject to a lot of penalties with the NFL.
Right.
These celebrities that are out there right now speaking, you know, they could open themselves up to potential liability that way. And also, listen, there's always libel and slander claims that remain open in this outspoken market.
What about, you know, an agency house firing an actor who chooses to speak out? Like, are those clauses in certain contracts?
Absolutely. Listen, the contracts are not protected under the so-called free speech First Amendment. Those contracts are specific language that's in there that you've admitted to, agreed to, and have to adhere to. So, again, you know, they don't think when they speak because they get emotionally involved. They have an enormous audience, and they want to go out there and kind of make a difference in their mind. But ultimately, there's ramifications to their business, and then you're going to see it happen now because this is the most outspoken time. Most of the celebrities are against Trump. Trump is doing things that are outrageous. This is a tremendous platform. I mean, you did see celebrities in the campaign, but they were for the Democratic side.
Right, so right.
Most of these celebrities that are going to come out now are going to be against Trump. And, you know, Trump is continuing to do some, you know, off the chart things that are kind of just rocking, you know, the community. And they're going to speak, and they're going to speak loud.
We're speaking live this morning with attorney Joseph Marone in Philadelphia. Revisit Madonna. Could she ultimately get in trouble for her remarks? Like, is that the First Amendment going too far, sort of you know, potentially inciting violence?
Yeah, listen, when you start to move the needle that far and you start to talk about criminal acts, you know, then you open yourself up to potential claims. It depends who it's being spoken to. And then remember, you know, one of the big things in our world today is Twitter. I mean, and, you know, they have these enormous Twitter accounts with millions of followers,
yeah.
And they tweet out, you know, statements that, you know, you're getting into the world of libel. And, you know, that's a whole nother avenue of liability that they're going to open themselves up to. Now, you know, remember, a lot of these celebrities are very wealthy, and then they're willing to take the chance, and I think they believe that they can weather the storm. But ultimately, you know, you're going to see them, you know, come up against a lot of various problems.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for a few minutes this morning. Good talking to you again. Attorney Joseph Marone in Philadelphia. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Good Monday to you. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, after a weekend of controversy coming from Washington, we could all use a good dumb criminal story, maybe to help diffuse the tension a little bit. This one comes from North Carolina, where a man pleaded guilty to walking away from a blackjack table, robbing a bank, and then returning to the casino to gamble his ill-gotten gains. Kerry Johnson told a circuit judge that he was under the influence of drugs when he walked into his own bank, where he'd been a customer for 40 years, handed the teller a note that claimed he was armed with a gun and a bomb. He left the bank with about $5,000. Prosecutors said Johnson returned to the casino, where he lost about $500 of the stolen money at the blackjack table. He was arrested at his home, where police found more of the stolen cash.
Mm. Yeah, now, I was surprised that you would say that he was under the influence of drugs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because,
shocker.
Right, because, you know, he's obviously an under-the-influence criminal. That's what kind of story this is, but it's also a dumb criminal story on about eight different levels. Let's see. He perpetrated these crimes in places, the two places where the most cameras are present pretty much anywhere you go, right?
Yes,
casinos and banks.
Banks.
Cameras everywhere. And then he went into his own bank,
yeah,
where they probably recognized him.
Yeah, they probably greeted him by name. Hey,
yeah.
Kerry,
hey.
What's up?
Good
hello,
to see
Mr.
you again.
Johnson.
What can I do for you this morning, Mr.
That's
Johnson?
Right.
And he hands him a note that says he's got a bomb on
yeah.
him. So,
yeah, not, yeah, that's not so good.
There was very little chance he was going to get away with this.
Right. Perhaps there's like bankrobbing101.com that he could read so that when he gets out of jail, he could do this properly the next time.
Yeah, we shall see.
And perhaps learn how to purchase tickets to Mexico.
Right. That's what
you don't
do.
Want to be
That's
sticking around your home after you rob a bank, you know, and threaten with a bomb.
And one Mississippi lawmaker, Gordon, really doesn't want to see your underwear. Tom Weathersby, a Republican serving in the state's House of Representatives, has proposed a law that could lead to fines and even counseling for people who wear their pants too low.
Counseling?
Counseling, yes. Mm.
Counseling, Mike?
Right. That's what it's come to, I think. The Huffington Post says that Weatherby's bill would make it, quote, unlawful for any person to wear pants, shorts, or clothing bottoms that exposes underwear or body parts in an indecent or vulgar manner. Hmm. The penalty for a first offense is a warning, and for juveniles, notifying their parents or guardians. After
that'll do it.
Right.
I'm telling
dad
telling
on you.
Your parents.
After that, the fines begin. $20 for a second offense, and they run up to $100 for a sixth offense. The sixth offense would also include psychological and social counseling by the Department of Human Services and the Department of Mental Health.
I see.
This wouldn't be the first time that lawmakers have taken time out of their busy schedules to ban saggy pants over the years. Opa-locka, Florida, and Wildwood, New Jersey have done it, and in 2015, four high school students in Tennessee were charged with indecent exposure, and two were jailed for wearing sagging pants.
Jailed.
Now, we're not talking about naked here.
Right.
We're just talking about pants a little bit too low. We're talking about, we're seeing your boxers.
Yeah, you know what I've learned, because I watch Cops? You know,
right.
Bad boys.
Right.
And I've learned that if you are trying to flee the authorities,
yes,
baggy pants do not work in your favor.
Right. Yeah. They're not built for speed.
No.
That's not a situation where aerodynamics is going to be on your side.
That's right. So I learned a lot from that show, and that's one of them. How about psychological and social counseling?
Yeah.
How about just, you might not get a decent job the rest of your life if you continue to wear your pants in that
fashion.
Well,
that's the thing. It's a sloppy look, right? And there's a lot of other sloppy looks out there and things that you probably shouldn't be doing, but is it criminal? Not sure about that.
I like the phrase clothing bottoms.
Yes. Yes.
Shorts, pants, or clothing bottoms. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. 8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
More than six people were killed and eight wounded when gunmen opened fire at a Quebec City mosque during Sunday night prayers in what Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau called a terrorist attack on Muslims. Police say two suspects have been arrested but gave no details about them or what prompted the attack. Quebec Prime Minister Philippe Couillard offered words of solace to the city's Muslim community.
We are with you. This is your home. You're welcome here. We are all Quebecers.
The shooting came on the weekend that Trudeau said Canada would welcome refugees after President Trump suspended the U.S. refugee program. Meanwhile, Trump continues to defend his order to halt the Syrian refugee program and temporarily suspend immigration from seven majority Muslim countries. He says it's to protect U.S. citizens and the border and insists it's not a Muslim ban. Nevertheless, protests continue across the country. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand addressed thousands at a demonstration yesterday in Manhattan's Battery Park.
President Trump's executive order is a mark of shame for this country. It makes us less safe. It's an absolute moral and ethical failure.
The president says the U.S. will resume issuing visas to all countries impacted after a review of security policies. In one weekend, the ACLU took in more than $24 million in online donations, six times what it typically raises in an entire year. Following Trump's executive order on immigration, the ACLU also says its membership has doubled since the election. The man accused of shooting to death five people at a South Florida airport earlier this month is scheduled to appear in federal court this morning for arraignment. The FBI says 26-year-old Esteban Santiago flew from Anchorage to Fort Lauderdale with a handgun in his checked luggage. He allegedly loaded the gun in a bathroom and came out firing in a baggage claim area. The cast of Hidden Figures has taken top honors at the Screen Actors Guild Awards for Best Ensemble. Best Actor went to Denzel Washington for his performance in Fences, an upset over Casey Affleck.
You know, I'm a God-fearing man. I'm supposed to have faith, but I didn't have faith.
Emma Stone got the outstanding performance by a female actor for La La Land.
Were there any victories for Hidden Fences?
They won.
I'm teasing. Yeah, I know.
Fences, Hidden Figures.
No. Fences. That whole dust up.
No.
Nothing, huh? Came up empty.
Yeah.
Nothing. Hey, listen, if Denzel's going to be Casey Affleck, fine.
He was great in
that
movie.
The only movie I saw.
Denzel was great, too. I saw that.
I like him. 5 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. Who do you give commands to or ask questions of or try to have a conversation with? Apple's got Siri, right? Microsoft, Cortana. Amazon's choice, Alexa. Yeah, so that means in some homes, this plan has backfired. The Wall Street Journal says the effort to make a gadget more human-like has earned it human enemies, especially among people with the name Alexa or Alexis, even Alex. Alexa Sussman, NYU grad who works in marketing, says, I always liked my name until Amazon gave it to a robot. Last week, when her dad asked her to grab some water from the kitchen, Amazon's Alexa chimed in. Amazon's choice for water is Fiji Natural Water, pack of 24. It's $27.27 with tax. Would you like to buy it? Not so welcome in that house. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.